The Canva wireless.
Short-lived.
Okay, we'll say it again. We are back in session. We're on record. And we'll pick up where we left off. We got into a little discussion we might have wanted to defer to council on. So we'll pick up. We were talking about subrogation interest. There was one, there's only one little technical piece there, and that was the Senate bill provides for subrogation recovery only from excess beyond full compensation as defined by the special master. We aren't clear if that was the original intent of Senator Mary Olson or whether it was an accurate drafting reflection of what she had tried to do, or whether it was simply going to be, that last dollar recovery instead of first dollar recovery. We're going to go back and do some double checking on that and see. The one other piece on that was we proposed to take the House position regarding recovery from state contractors. You had some language in your bill that dealt specifically with that. We thought it was good language. In terms of attorney's fees, we both have positions in the bills relating to it not being an element of damages. So that's obviously agreement. There was some brief discussion on the side-by-side or when we went through the bill comparisons about whether or not the legislature ought to take a position with regard to the private attorney-client retainer arrangements. We proposed to leave that to the private parties to make their own determinations. When we get into data practices, I think we all agree in principle on data practice and the use of the data that is collected by the special master panel to make their determinations. In some ways, the Senate language is a bit more detailed. That some of those details can be sorted out. So we want to take a look at that. Probably council can help us with that. But we propose using the Senate position regarding we had a language in there that specifically restricted the data's use in subsequent proceedings, which we thought was helpful to keep in there. The next category was fund and appropriation for the 35W. The Senate position was no codified permanent fund, just a bridge compensation fund. And we had specified dollar amounts in there, $25 million for compensation, $750,000 for administration, and then a White House component. So we proposed to take the Senate position on that, as reflected in some of the earlier categories as well. And our position then was to fully fund the settlement offers, whatever they were to come to, within the restrictions that were consistent with the Senate position. White House, a number of questions were raised at the last conference committee about the proposed use of the White House money. So we just propose to leave that open at this time to get some answers to some of the questions that were raised before we sort that out. We did agree that it'd be helpful to have a specific date in there by which any first appropriation would be made to make sure that the money goes out the door quickly. And then with regard to the emergency compensation, I think there was agreement on this in the last House proposal that there wouldn't be any restriction on claimants continuing to seek funds from the emergency payment fund that's already in place through the Department of Administration, and that it would be a collateral source offset when we get back to when we get around to full or final award determinations. I think the House position in your bill was originally to close that fund or to close it off at this point. And our view was if there is any continuing need and qualification by claimants for ongoing, because some of the claimants were actually getting weekly payments out of there to reflect their ongoing wage loss, that would continue until such time as they made the claim or received recovery from the state on a claim, and then it would just be offset in that claim determination.
And Mr. Chair, there is another issue.
Representative Winkler.
With regard to that, that I think we may want to consider, which is that I can't remember what the dollar amounts, but my memory says roughly 50-50. Half that money was coming from a trunk highway fund tort settlement account, I think. And I know that there's a lot of concern about use of trunk highway funds for any kind of payments under this, certainly in the transportation world. And maybe we need to have language saying that they can continue up to the point of exhausting the general fund that they have available for that purpose, but not access the trunk highway fund dollars. I know that that would be something that I think Representative Solberg would be concerned about.
Myself and others as well, and I think it goes back a little bit into concern of the governor's proposed funding as well, and I think both of us have rejected tapping into the trunk highway fund for that. But someone needs to refresh my memory how much that was in the first go-around, that emergency fund.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kahn?
While you're doing that, I don't think any money was ever taken out of the trunk highway fund, was it?
It hasn't been up to a point. I think actually Ms. Roberts can probably...
Mr. Chair, members, I don't have the most up-to-date information on this as of last week, but the Department of Finance took the position of first using the general fund tort claim appropriation to make the emergency payments, and the amount of that appropriation for fiscal year 2008 was $161,000. I believe they're now at the point where they've exceeded that, and I will check with them to clarify whether they're going to move into using the second year general fund appropriation or if they're contemplating touching the trunk highway fund. I think they would have let both myself and Mr. Mossman know if the trunk highway funds were being tapped, but I'll clarify that before the next meeting.
Great. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Roberts, was that from the LAC? Or was it another special tort fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I think you're thinking of the general contingent appropriation reviewed by the LAC. That's a different appropriation. This is a specific appropriation that is included both in the state government finance bill for the general fund piece and the trunk highway pieces in the transportation bill, but specifically for tort claims.
Okay.
So I think we're all on the same page of desiring not to use trunk highway funds for this purpose.
Mr. Chair, in looking at your appropriations, does your appropriations, as I understand it, total up to the $26,430?
I think that's correct. It'd be $25
million. It is the three separate ones. Not
plus $750,000 plus
$680,000. Yeah. Well, if I may have the liberty, I'd like to pick up a little bit on what the Senator Moa kind of said a little bit today. I was kind of impressed with that we need to do this right. And when you picked up the thing of Katrina and do it fair and within, of course, within available appropriations. And I'd like to have a little bit more discussion on just that. I think you said that you needed a one-time fund, but to make sure that there was enough available resources for it to make sure that it accomplishes what it needs to be done. And I kind of like that thought anyway. And I'll go back a little bit to the Senate language as well of saying, well, here's an appropriation, but we intend to do more if necessary. And I think you're picking up that our goals are the same in that respect. Maybe Senator Moore can kind of expand on that a bit to her thoughts.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, in terms of the word that may end up getting attributed to me after this conference committee is over is finality. And I believe that we live in a reality here where you of all people understand the constraints that we're operating under. And I think we need to be transparent and manage people's expectations. I think we need to be honest and upfront with the survivors. on what realistically we can do. And to the degree that, you know, between the House cap and the Senate cap, we can come up with what will work because we know what the realistic constraints are. I may differ a little bit from my other confreres in that I don't believe that we ought to leave open the window that more money will be available in another legislative session. I think it's unrealistic, and I think though we can't speak for future legislatures, I also think that it is not fair and it's unrealistic to raise that kind of expectation among the families and the survivors. Now, I'm not speaking for my colleagues here, but that's my sense. And so my interest in this is, again, between the House cap and the Senate cap, how do we resolve this? But we resolve in a way where we know what that amount is. And once this session ends, the special masters knows what they need to do. The survivors know what they need to do. And we know how to plan for future purposes. From the Senate side, I like the number that we put in place because from my knowledge of the work that we've done, I feel like where the Senate is at is a number that we're willing to commit to. And I'm willing to say to my chair that I think that may be all that we can do unless, there is some other avenue that we can identify. But even if we're able to identify some other avenue, we need to think about the finality of it. And so, my perspective is we came to the table with this number because we think that's what we can do. If there's a way to do something else, I'm open to that conversation. But certainly, I think that that we just need to have some end date and not unrealistically leave the opportunity open. On the other hand, I also think that I'm concerned about the House cap. And I don't know enough. I understand that the governor's proposal is 20 from the general fund and maybe 20 from trunk highways if we need to use that. And I don't think that's realistic because for me, the message that sends me is that the real number, if we can do, is really only 20. Because I don't know how much we can tap to the trunk highway. So if I were to look at the governor's proposal, I think that realistically the governor's cap is at 20. And we're at the Senate cap is at 26, and the House cap is at 40, and I think that's the reality that we're talking about. And I'm not on the Finance Committee. I'm not, and I don't know what number is realistic given our constraints. So,
Senator Solberg,
we have booked the 40 from the general fund because I think we agree with everybody that to go down the road of the truck highway fund is dangerous. I know the truck highway fund has been used for smaller tort claims, and there's never been a constitutional test on it. But I think a $20 million would bring a constitutional test from somebody, and it would be, I think, difficult to sustain that. But as I read the Constitution, we have.
So we have... Now reviewed the Senate offer. In the context of that, we've had a number of philosophical discussions. It had been my intent to at least revisit in part the conversation that we'd had at the last conference committee when Representative Kahn was unable to be there regarding the purpose or value of a permanent fund of sorts. And I don't know, we did review some of that already. And so unless there's someone wants to jump back into that particular discussion, I guess that's part of the philosophical divide that we have here. As I said, I've asked counsel to provide some guidance in comparing the legislation that is traveling with regard to some kind of a permanent natural disaster response mechanism to Article 1 of the House bill, which is written more broadly than that anyway. It doesn't limit it to natural disasters. It includes a variety of basically any losses in the state. And the damage categories are defined far more broadly than in tort claims. It would open the door, I think, to all sorts of injury-type claims arising out of natural disasters as well. I mean, I think it opens the door for anyone who gets injured or dies in the context of a tornado or a snowstorm or a flood or anything else that might be considered a catastrophe would have a claim against that fund if the legislature were willing to fund it. And I can already imagine every state representative and every state senator that has such an event occur in their district introducing a bill saying, we've got the fund here, we've got the structure in place, we need to put some money in it to compensate my constituents who lost under these circumstances. And legislative will being what it tends to be, it's hard sometimes to say no. It would create a whole different dynamic in that regard to have this structure in place even would create a whole different dynamic. And that's part of my concern in dealing with that. Representative Kahn?
Well, of course, when we were thinking about this, I knew nothing about this natural. When we learned about that last week, I think, this natural fund disaster structure bill. And so one of the things is, I guess I would like an explanation about why it's appropriate to do that for that case and not appropriate to do it for this case. And the first solution, because I guess we do expect, just looking at previous histories, we expect the natural disasters to occur more frequently than the, maybe with global warming, even more frequently than the bridges falling down. Well, I don't know. I guess one shouldn't make predictions about that. But one of the things, if you guys, because you've certainly looked at it more than I have, if you think that's been well thought out and that's in good shape, one of the first things is that you would put that in place first, if that's going in place. And so the first thing is this second kind of fund would only be, this second kind of structure would only be available if the natural disaster one didn't take place. So you'd never have the, so you'd already say that if it's this, the structure that's in place from that bill, that you have to go to that first before you then go to this one. And you only go to this one when that one doesn't take effect. Assuming that that's going to pass and that you've looked at it and that you think it's a well thought out.
Representative Kahn, I haven't read through that bill in detail, so I can't tell you even if it contemplates a specific.
But you're on the committees that passed.
I'm not.
You're not on judicial? No.
I'm public safety, but that's a different thing.
I'm not familiar with either.
Budget.
Well,
Senator Bessel?
And Mr. Chair, unless and until we pass such a bill, and unless and until we actually see whether it works, we're always speculating the future. With every bill we pass, we're always trying to figure out, is this going to work? And a lot of times we figure out, well, because we overlook things, or we didn't contemplate that something else was going to happen. It sort of seems to me, just in the time that I've been in the legislature, you know, we got in this habit of calling special sessions every time there was a tornado or something happened, and we have to come on in and fund it. And I remember 10 years ago there was some sort of desire to say, why don't we just appropriate some money, put it aside so that we've got it covered and we don't have to come in. And that seemed to solve it. But we were in special session last September because of that. So I think we may have to spend a couple of tries at it to get it right, even if this is the way to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's just for something we know is going to happen. And, you know, we hope and pray that we will never have, any kind of an incident like this last one. But, I just lack the confidence that we can actually put it in statute and be really sure that it's actually going to work because, you know, we're good, but we're not that good.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I noticed or heard you say that you had booked this dollar amount. Was it in your bill yesterday, or where do you?
No, but as we go through the process, in Ways and Means Committee, as your Finance Committee, you have to come down with
have
zero. So we have it
counted.
Yeah, it's set aside. It's not in that bill, but there are three or four different expenditures of the transportation bill is another example of a bill that had passed that we had to book that cash.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Shag, yeah, that was on the Senate spreadsheets too. I mean, in order to balance the bill, we had to account for this as it left the Finance Committee.
Okay. Yeah, no, I know that.
I'm looking through that bill as it's currently written in the Senate, and so far everything that I can see relates to community infrastructure, with the exception of providing some mental health counseling concerns. But it deals with infectious disease concerns, indoor environments of public and nonprofit buildings, some economic assistance, rebuilding of roads, some agricultural assistance, livestock investment grants, organic certification assistance, forage production for loss offsets. Education includes helping school districts who end up losing some per pupil funding. And some transportation aid. I mean, it seems to be, at least from my first cut here, that none of these are it looks like it's infrastructure and not personal injury kind of payments. But when Ms. Pontius or Mr. Watson, who I spoke with about it, gets a chance to do a more elaborate comparison of the bills, it'll help us, I think, sort some of that out. I think maybe at this point, we certainly can have the table open for discussion, but there's, the Senate's made an offer, and I think at this point, maybe it's incumbent upon the House to consider how you wish to respond.
Mr. Chair, I guess in part from a process standpoint, if you look at the Senate offer and consider everything above the top two lines, permanent catastrophe fund, state tort claim limits, those are the kind of operative issues that need to be resolved. And I think that most of the others can probably be resolved fairly quickly with you and I working with counsel, and we may want to involve the Attorney General's office as well to make sure that we're getting kind of the best legal advice. There may be some other things like the emergency compensation payments, Wade House, but most of the rest of those, I think, kind of follow from the top two issues. And I don't know that we have a obvious path forward on kind of the bigger issues, and I think a lot of those others can be deferred to a more detailed work through once we have kind of a structure in place. So from that, I guess that's sort of a process point of view. I think it was strongly Mark Shepherd's view, at least, that we should reserve some time to work through any of the legal technicalities or details after we come to some kind of a conceptual agreement. So I don't know if there's a lot of benefit in going through all those items and finding agreement, though you and I have, I think, found some common ground on the special master issue and various other things. And you have some additional language, too, regarding that.
Yeah, you had suggested we had talked about making sure that the claimants have an opportunity to be heard in the process, not just a matter of submitting paperwork. And so language something to this effect I think is fair to include. Each claimant shall have an opportunity to make a presentation in person to a member of the special master panel in support of their claim. Now we have to recognize if we're paying the members of the special master panel to handle these claims, that's going to add time to the process, maybe a significant amount of time, which will mean additional administrative costs in handling the fund. We can try to work that out, I suppose. Representative Solberg?
With that particular language, I think we've agreed on three masters, is that correct? A panel?
Yes.
And that language would, so each one could do their a separate one, is that right?
Yeah, I specifically put to a member of the special master panel, not to the whole panel.
Would it be expectations, when you talked about administrative fees, would it be expectations that during that type of a presentation that it's recorded, or you need to have staff with for whatever they call the person who does
court
all?
Court reporter.
Court reporter. Thank you. All right.
You don't want
those type.
I don't think you want to have a court reporter requirement. I think it would be smart to have those proceedings recorded.
Okay. But more informal than a court reporter.
Too. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not a deposition or anything like that. But, you know, Ken Feinberg made a point of stating when he administered the 9/11 fund that he personally spent a half an hour with each claimant. And there were like 1,000 or more that he actually spent time with. And had
sounds like the legislative process last night.
Yes. Yes. But he spent like a year and a half or 2 years administering the process. So it was a long.
On that point, Mr. Chair, of course, you know, whatever happens, you know, is at the end public, of course. And I am assuming that at the end there's going to be some sort of a list of, you know, what payments were made out, who got them, and so forth. I would guess that is somebody who's making a presentation to a special master, is that going to be public information or ultimately not public information? You know, I mean, the end result is going to be public. And if it's public,
I thought we said
does the press have a right to sit there and listen to it as somebody comes and makes a presentation to the special master? We haven't worked out those details, but I think because the questions are going to come up.
It's a fair question, Senator Betzel. Senator Moore?
Well, Mr. Chair, from my perspective, I would hope that as we put in language in the statute, we would ask that the proceedings of the special master be subsumed under perhaps the judicial proceedings, judicial proceedings, thereby making the proceedings non-public. Confidential? Most, non-public? Whatever,
like,
Ms. Pani.
Like
yeah, they've got their own rules within the judiciary.
And I thought we addressed that.
Yeah, that part.
I thought we addressed that in the statute.
And yeah, we might want to specifically include any kind of these kind of proceedings, not just the data submitted on a claims form.
And Mr. Chair, the key importance is that we're affording an opportunity to be heard. And I think that's an essential point of process that we want to make sure happens. And, of course, that's an option. For survivors, if they want to engage in that or not, but I think we want to give them some comfort that they're not just once again being asked to bear their souls and financial information for the world if it's inconsistent with the other kind of data practices or confidentiality rules we have. So we'll investigate and come up with a good answer.
Senator Scheid?
Mr. Chairman, if you might, I don't know if you're getting ready to wrap up, but I mean, we obviously have those two serious issues and differences between the two bodies. The Senate had a very strong position, I think, against removing the individual cap, the tort caps. And I'd like to hear the discussion on the House side of the policy of doing that, you know, other than, you know, and not that I don't want to discount the media coverage and the emails and the phone calls and, you know, or comments that any of us have had from members of the public, but because I'm troubled. I frankly am troubled by someone who in 2005 was unable to, a 32-year-old person unable to return to their occupation, $300,000. 2006, medical bills exceeded the cap. The award was $300,000. Those are Minnesotans, and I'm troubled about our doing this. And is it just going to take the caps off for the future? And what's the consequence of that? So if you, I don't want to give my argument. I guess I just did. But, you know, I'd like to hear the policy, your policy perspective here.
If just on a
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, the Representative Scheid. I think during the Sixth Committee hearings and the fairly extensive floor debate we had, at no time was there an amendment offered to introduce a individual cap. Mm-hmm. on damages. So I don't know that, you know, we can interpret that, I guess, more than one way. But at no time was there ever a voice or roll call vote or any of any sort on that issue. The House bill and the Senate bill kind of started from two different conceptual places. I think that we had a lot of discussion about whether we should, in fact, take some extraordinary action or not. But there was really only one member of the House who took a strong position saying we shouldn't do it. And the impression that I had from most members of the House was not that they were – that they're committed to a particular version of how this ought to be done, but simply that something should be done, it should be fair, and please do the best you can in figuring out what that needs to be, knowing that the Senate has a different bill coming through. I think that was the sense that I had. And that's how I read, and this is partly in response to Senator Moore, how I read the governor's various statements on this bill as well, which is that this is an extraordinary event. Something must happen because the alternative is not acceptable. And we hope that the legislature and this conference committee comes up with a compromise that will be fair and address the situation. And according to, I think, maybe the guidelines that Senator Mua outlined. Now, I think it looked like some of my colleagues were interested in addressing the specific issue of the caps. That's been, you know, we've had a lot of discussion about that here. And there is a difference in how you look at this bill as strictly a tort settlement, or whether this is a response to a disaster within the kind of general welfare response parameters that the legislature uses to address a number of situations. And I think it has elements of both. And that if you look strictly from the tort law context, it doesn't quite address this situation. And the only consistent thing to do for those individuals you mentioned would be to leave the law in place. No exception was made for them. And what we're talking about doing under either proposal today is making an exception for a different group of people caught in a different situation, from my point of view. So there, I think, competing and, I think, relevant ways of looking at this issue. And the House approach has been to say we should have a hard occurrence cap in the sense that we would like a final appropriation. But within that, we would like to be fair and recognize that this is an unusual situation. And that's, I think, consistent with what our committee process led to.
Representative Solberg?
Well, and I think both of us, both the Senate and the House, have stepped beyond the hard cap, because otherwise we would probably go back to the situation where the corrections driver was in an accident and they all settled for under the within the $1 million cap. And so I think, you know, we've gone past that on both sides. How do we get to a compromise in the middle of that?
Senator Betzel.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, there are a lot of time-tested principles that can guide us, and I think that that's what we should, you know, fall back on. This recent case of this young girl, Abigail Taylor, I think her name was, who died mm-hmm. Because she sat on that drain and it pulled out her intestines. I mean, she had a significant negligence claim, and it was considered that she was going to have to spend, you know, I mean, the rest of her life, you know, serious medical damages. And they had a lawsuit going, and then she passed away recently. Well, by her death, a lot of the lawsuit for the pain and suffering and damages went away. So ultimately, however that's going to be resolved, you know, the family's going to get less from her by her dying than it would have received by her living. And that isn't unique to that situation. That's just how it works out. Regardless of whether we have the House number or the Senate number, there is a finite amount of money. And as I indicated at our last meeting, you know, it's impossible for us to set up some sort of an open-ended perpetual trust account to deal, to make make all the survivors, make the families, make everybody whole. There's no contemplation that can be done in any way, shape, or form. And in the end, it could very well be that people, the families of those who died, may get less than the survivors who lived, because the survivors who lived are going to have long-term consequences and expenses and needs, and that's not going to be for us to sort out. That's a special master. But whether it's 400,000 or a different number, it is going to be capped. And so, you know, I think that some people may have the false impression that somehow, you know, there's the Senate limits it and the House does not. And I think people have to understand, both bills have a limit, and that's as far as we can go. Now, how the money will be divided up and so forth, I don't know. But in the end, I think that for the 13 families, you know, who lost loved ones, there'll be a dollar amount. Whether it's the same for the two-year-old as for everybody else, I don't know. That might be the appropriate thing to do, or it might not be. But it's going to be a fixed sum. And then for the other people, you know, they're going to get a fixed sum as well, too. Now, the other, if we just threw our hands up and just say, well, let's just waive sovereign immunity, everybody go to court, sue the state, that's another way to do it. But in the end, all they'd get is a judgment, which is going to be a fixed dollar amount anyway. This is going to save a couple of years. It's going to save a couple of steps and make it a lot quicker and easier to get the money. But in the end, it's still going to be a finite sum. And I think we have to stress that, whether it's the $40 million or the $27 million or any number in between.
Oh. Representative Kahn?
Let me start out by saying I guess I completely agree with what Senator Betzalt has just said, that we will deal with a cap of some kind. And we've both said that. We've just dealt with it in separate ways. I'm going back to what Senator Moore asked for, and that's the difference of what's the difference in philosophy. And I think the difference in philosophy, as I see it, between the House and the Senate is that the Senate has a strong desire to put it within the claims framework. And the House sees that as something, and they see that as something that's better to do, and the House sees that as something that's worse to do, that if we treat this as something separate and we don't make it, fit it into the claims process, then it won't be an example for someone going through the claims process to use, remembering how different the claims process is. When you do the claims process, you first have to go through court and so forth. So if we say this so that you won't have the next person who's hurt by a corrections officer or something like that say, but I mean, they may say it, but the point is, wait, we said that that was different, and we have this long, time-tested claims process that all of these other things, which we expect many more of them will happen in the future, will go through that claims process. But I think if you adjust the claims process to take care of that, then it's going to be much easier to make that argument from someone in the future. Look, you changed the claims process for this. Why won't you change it for me? And if we start out at the forefront by saying this is not the claims process, then I think we're much better off to avoid that. You never know what anyone's going to say or what precedent anyone's going to try and use. But that just seems to me, a much better way of avoiding the question of what do you say to the next, you know, the next Drew Shadeen or the next person harmed by a corrections van or something like that.
So
this was different.
Senator Moore.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think at the end of the day, I'm interested in a process that would best facilitate for the survivors. I mean, how do we best facilitate a process for them that's easy to understand, is transparent, and then from our perspective as policymakers, that is sustainable to us long term. And so for the same reason, perhaps Representative Kahn and I will probably end up at different perspectives, but I do want to come back and perhaps I can't remember if I've asked this question before, but I am interested because in the Senate we have the tort cap of the 400,000. I think our bill outlines, already has in outlined the process under which the special master will go through, and then, you know, evaluating how much, and then we already set up sort of, unless you are under the 400,000, but if you go over that, I mean, we already, people know how much they're going to be getting. And I'm interested in hearing from the House what you are contemplating, how that process would work. And maybe we've talked about it, but I just, now that we're revisiting, I like a kind of a hypothetical on how, from the House bill, how that process would work.
Could someone show me in the Senate bill where you get to go above the 400,000?
No. I said not even if the claim is above 400,000, we already know that it's 400,000.
Okay. Right.
But if it's less than that, then that gets determined up to that amount. I mean, I think it's, you know, we have set that parameter, so we've created that expectation. But I didn't know in the House if you can walk through a hypothetical.
Well, Chair, Senator Mua, as we have proposed, I guess, in our first response, the concept in the House bill now, or the House proposal now, and it was there before too, was that the special master collects claims from all potential survivors by October 1st. They look at the total claims. They sort through them. They identify which are compensable and which aren't under the scheme that we have in place here. They make some determinations about what is supported, what's not. Maybe they ask for more information. And then they arrive at what the total kind of world is. And then they say, well, now I have $39 million. How can I basically create the most equitable outcome for these people as I possibly can, given the fixed resource that I have to provide them? And then they may come up with, and there could be various approaches. They could say that if you were on the bridge, you are automatically entitled to X dollars. In addition, you will get X percentage of your economic losses, Y percentage of your unreimbursed medical, and Z percentage of non-economic losses on top of that. But they will have to sift through what's in front of them and make the best determination. And I think having a panel is helpful because it means that there will be some collaboration and some ability to work together on that. And I can't remember what the details are, but the people, not only are we kind of defining the parameter of analysis, which they will use by referencing tort law, definitions of damages, et cetera, but we're also including people who are, at least I can't remember what your language is, but some legal background, so that the principles of the legal system will then also be brought to bear in their analysis, so that in many ways they become kind of a tribunal that is doing the best they can in a highly imperfect situation, which probably none of us would want to take on, and try to craft the best possible remedy.
Well, Mr. Chair, I hadn't grasped the elegance in the House approach from a gathering all the information and then going back to the number. And so I from the input we've been getting from some of the survivors, I had not grasped that there's a potential here that if, let's say, the total pot of the total number as collected by the special master's panel could go to $60 million, let's say, in damages, right? And they would then do they would have to come up with a formula on to how to best allocate that. So
yes.
So
it's like a structured settlement.
So it is in essence. I mean, you impose the limit at the back end to say, you know, the max is at the 40, and if you are more than that, our formula can come in and you can get less than what you're entitled to. And in fact, if depending on what the special master's determined to be, what that formula is, perhaps under our approach, somebody could get a little bit more because we put the 400 mandatory. We do a little bit more of a redistribution. So somebody conceivably could get, who has a smaller claim, could conceivably get a little bit more under the Senate approach than they would get under the House approach, because the House approach would be proportionate, right? So I was not tuning into that, and I think some of our survivors are not tuning into that. They think that under the House cap amount, you know, if you have a couple million dollars in damages, that they would be able to collect that entire amount, and that's not the case, because it their what happens to them is entirely dependent on the pool of people who are going to be participating.
And yes, and Senator Moore, I'm not sure that they're not familiar with that concept, because certainly their representatives are, and I know that they've had a lot of discussion about that. And, you know, frankly, part of my motivation in trying to pursue that approach is because there is these people now have an identity as a group. And I think that there is a certain kind of sense of being a group of people and not wanting to, and you know, the communications we receive on this issue are not just from people who have big damages. A lot of them are for people who would receive less as a result of having to make this proportional. But I think that they have such a strong identity as having gone through this experience that they want to honor that. And I think that's in part why they prefer that approach.
Well, for what it's worth, Representative Winkler, I'm receiving some contrary communications from members of that same group that would disagree with what you're describing as a consensus of the survivors.
I didn't say it was a consensus.
I don't think everyone in the group is willing to give up as much of their individual claim to assist those that may be more severely injured as one might presume, because the way the House bill is set up, the only way to give more than $400,000 to the more seriously injured is to take it away from those who are less seriously injured. So if you asked everyone under the Senate bill who would be entitled to, say, $250,000 for full compensation for their losses, if you added up the medical expenses, and I'm not just talking uncompensated, because their damages awards are determined by the total medical expenses, wage loss, pain and suffering. If you add all of that up and it comes to $250,000, they would get that under the Senate bill. The only time they don't get their full damages is if their full damages exceeds $400,000. But under the House bill, that person who would get $250,000 out of the Senate bill might only get $125,000. So that that money could be redistributed to those who are more seriously injured. And I suggest if you took a survey of all of the survivors and you asked how many of those who would otherwise get $250,000 are willing to give up $125,000 of their payments, I don't think that you would find that they would all be willing to do that. I think to the contrary. So either plan here is making choices between claimants. And the difference is, in the House plan, the special master panel is the one who's setting off one claimant against another in terms of making those dollar allocations. And in the Senate plan, there is a very codified sense of direction that levels the playing field. It levels the playing field in terms of the dollar amounts that are going to any individual person that lost something. So whether it's, I would anticipate probably everyone who lost a life, their family would get the $400,000. So in that sense, it treats every life the same. Every individual life is treated the same. When you get into the medical expense question, basically you're taking from Peter to pay Paul is what you end up doing. You're taking from those who have smaller claims to pay the larger claims. That's just the financial reality of it, because there is a finite pot of money available to do that. At least in the Senate plan, there's a leveling of the playing field piece that goes into effect. In the House plan, it's kind of the guideline is quote-unquote equity, whatever equity or equitable distribution means, and that's handed off to the special master panel. And the Senate plan provides more specific guidelines. We're making some equity determinations up front, I guess is what you would say, as within the group of claimants for this fund, and as between this group of claimants compared to past claimants against the state for injury losses and future claimants against the state for injury losses. Essentially, we're treating them in principle the same. Now, the difference is with that aggregate cap, but we've got, we think, a very principled basis that we all agree upon, which is the numbers of people in this aggregate event are so large that applying that cap would compress individual recoveries to such a tiny amount
that it would seem to be grossly unfair. But in terms of the individual claims here for losses, I mean, the categories of losses add up the same as they do in any tort claim case. You've got your medical expenses, you've got your wage loss, you've got your pain and suffering. That's what you add up. Those aren't any different than someone who was injured by action of the state in some other incident. They add up the same. It's the same categories. You add them together the same. The math is the same. So the Senate position treats them the same as individual claimants, with the exception that we did propose to raise the $300,000 to $400,000. Now, we could have, and my original inclination was just to literally do lockstep with the existing law on the $300,000. And I was struggling to find some kind of a principle upon which we could increase that to some amount. And and I settled upon the grounds, which I thought was a fair, rational basis, that but for the passage of a difference of 5 months in time, state law had an automatic increase built in to that. So going forward, individuals would be getting $400,000 as their cap in other incidents as well as in this. And there were two other governmental bodies that would be included in this liability release, the City of Minneapolis and the University of Minnesota, which otherwise would be subject to their own liability exposure and caps on recoveries. So it made sense if we included them in the release that we could use some portion of their liability exposure to include in the cap increase. But going beyond $400,000, I couldn't find any principled basis for doing it, especially when you start comparing it as against other similarly situated individuals, either before this event, as Senator Scheid explained, or in the future.
Again, that's my argument for wanting to take it out of the claims process and to say that this is something different. This is a disaster process. But the thought that, you know, the special masters will have the ability to make, Ryan just kind of went through the way that he would do it, but they'll have the ability to decide if there should be some set number for a death. They'll have the ability to start there and to take that off. We're not restricting them, and we're not telling them what they have to do. But the idea that somebody who would have, you know, some, and I know that nothing is really a smaller injury, but would have some smaller injury completely covered just because it happens to fall under 400,000, and someone who had massive injuries that went beyond that $400,000, or massive damages is probably the word I should say, you know, would only get a tiny fraction of that covered is not equity. It's not equity to me. I'd rather, imperfect as our setting, our final number may be, and as imperfect as the special master's decisions might be, I kind of prefer to let that take its place than to move in with a upfront formula which we know is wrong.
Representative Kahn, that, 2 points in response. One is that's an inequity in existing law.
Let's talk about getting rid of existing law.
Which I think is a discussion we might be able to find some agreement on. But that's a different discussion, I think. We couldn't do that within 1 year of this incident. But that is an inequity in existing law. That's the fact of life. Someone who gets injured in a car accident caused by the state with only $250,000 in damages is going to get fully compensated. Someone who has massive damages is not going to get fully compensated. That may not be fair, but then you fall back on the why do we have liability caps for government liability in the first place, and there's a policy trade-off that the legislature has in its wisdom ever since the mid-70s when the Supreme Court said you have to put into place. So for 30-plus years, that's been the policy of this state. We're going to make that equitable trade-off. We're going to, but then you get back to, okay, let's get out of this paradigm. But if you're going to get out of this paradigm, then you're defining your way out of the paradigm. I mean, you're creating a legal fiction, which is another way of saying a fake construct to say this isn't a tort. It's a catastrophe.
But once we pass it into law, it's not a fake construct.
No, but it is in reality. No matter what you put in law, in reality, it's still a tort. You can't. We get back to the. You can pass a law that says gravity isn't in effect.
We've gone through that.
Right, but it's the same principle, Representative Kahn. I mean,
the bridge accident showed us that you can't.
It showed that you can't say it doesn't that gravity. So you can't say this is not a tort just by saying it's not a tort. It is a tort by every definition in the law.
Is this like a Blackstone argument, whether the law is natural or a construct?
I mean, well, perhaps, but we're beyond that point. I mean, we have, I mean, the black letter law, if you will, every law school in the country, every court in the country recognizes the basic elements of tort. And this is exactly the basic elements of tort, no matter if you try to give it a different name. A rose by any other name is still a rose.
And Mr. Chairman,
and Senator Hammond.
And I think to your point, and this is really some of the trouble that I have, when you look at the definition of catastrophe in the House language, essentially it says a catastrophe is any event for which the legislature appropriates money and says it's for a catastrophe. That's what it is. And so you say, well, then what does that mean? And it could mean anything. And I was thinking about this as we broke for lunch, and I thought, what if you had a circumstance where at the university, let's say, and you had a building where the basketball team was practicing and the roof collapsed and they were all killed, and it was an NCAA championship team. Huge catastrophe, wide notoriety, but relatively small number of people, 20 or how many ever on the basketball team and the coaches, and they were all killed or horribly injured. Does that then become a catastrophe? And the point I'm getting at is what I fear is then you create a claim construct that is very dependent upon maybe who you are, your notoriety, your perceived importance to the state. What if it was a professional team or some other celebrity or political figures? Do they become classified as catastrophic events because they're well known? These are questions that are all likely to be factored in some future event whereby there was what otherwise would be considered a damage, a claim, an accident, injury, but there would be no way to prospectively say this is what a catastrophe is. And I think that imprecision in this language is what has led me to my comment to say this takes us out of the realm of rule through a structure and through a law, but more into the preferences or the judgments that are very variable depending on who happens to be in the legislature at the time this comes before it. And I'm very troubled by that as a structure. And maybe if there's a way to say, let's define precisely what this means. Let's rewrite the tort structure and replace it with something else. We'll call it the catastrophic structure. Maybe we could do that and come up with some alternative. But without that, it's like opening it up and saying, let's just see what happens. And I'm not comfortable with that.
Well, Senator Hamm, we could more carefully define it if we chose to do so as part of this definition. And that still wouldn't have to leave the element of legislative discretion out of it. I mean, these aren't mutually exclusive things. We could more narrowly define it and still leave it to the legislature to appropriate funds in the future or change the law. I mean, ultimately, as we've, you know, there's no way we can bind them anyway.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, right? Representative Winkler, I think that if you said, well, we're going to create another group called a catastrophic group, it's separate from your point is we should not call this a tort claim, take it out. Okay, we're going to create this. Well, then let's define that. What does that mean? And maybe it says it has to be a certain number of people, or I don't know what the terms would be, but I think if you start to go down that path, you might be able to, after a certain number of qualifiers, reach something that was reasonably precise, and maybe that would work, but I still am not sure that that's better than the current structure that we have today, which is well accepted and broadly understood and prospectively known, but we could do that. And I think, but unless we do that, to accept the language as it is, it leaves it pretty open to say it's whatever the legislature at the time happens to think is a catastrophe. And that could be virtually anything of virtually any size, and it really raises the question of, are people then going to be treated fairly in similar circumstances given the injuries that they may have received?
Well,
Representative Compton.
You could say, you know, 9/11, what's the total number of, I think it's 3,100 or something like that. Is that total?
Yeah, there are about, I think there are about 7,000 or 8,000 total.
Okay. Whatever. Okay, whatever
claims
that.
Paid.
Whatever.
About 15,000 claimants.
Whatever that number is, it's a small number of the, particularly since then, the proportion of people killed on the highways of New York and New Jersey, you know, alone. It's, you know, the number of people now, well, the number of people, if we include all people, killed in the Iraq War far exceeds that. So, you know, so for some reason, it was decided that a special structure was needed for that. That it couldn't just be left to just the ordinary way in which we deal with deaths that I think more arguably was not the fault of misactions of the, well, we'll see what happens with the court cases that are proceeding. Of
well, Representative Kahn, I can tell you what Ken Feinberg told us was the justification. He said the justification was economic and international. Economic because there was a concern that there'd be mass lawsuits against the airline industry, which could cripple the transportation infrastructure for the nation. International because they wanted to send a message to the rest of the world that the United States was not going to be bent by terrorist attacks on the United States. Completely outside of the question of how do you handle specific claims. And in fact, Ken Feinberg sat in front of us and he told us he didn't think it was an appropriate way to do it. He didn't think that there ought to be another 9/11 fund in a similar situation. And there haven't been 9/11 funds, comparable funds, in any of the other catastrophes or disasters that have befallen places in the United States since that time. The the shootings on the college campus, it was a private fund. The Katrina, there was no big public fund set up for that either.
Yes.
I mean, he went through a list of the 7 or 8 different catastrophes, if you will, and there was no publicly funded compensation fund that was put together. He said that was unique to the international and historical circumstances of that incident, he recommended against putting together any kind of a special compensation fund when he was here. He said, just move quickly, do what you will with the caps, and move quickly. Right. And that's, that's all he said. He said, let your risk management people just process the claims fast.
Senator Latz, I sat through that entire hearing. I think you're considerably understating the nuance of what he had to say at that committee hearing. I think what he said, first of all, was that it's up to the legislature to decide if something unique should be done or not. And then he said, if you decide that something unique should be done, then you should do something that is administratively simple and gives people an opportunity to be heard and move on. He also, I think, indicated that there was something unique about 9/11 that justified the fund beyond the principle of an international statement or the airline industry. He did say that the 9/11 fund probably should not be repeated. And I think he said in part because there would unlikely to be such unique set of circumstances, but that was also in the context of an unlimited appropriation from the Treasury and unlimited discretion, essentially, given to him. So I think that there was a lot more nuance in what he had to say based on his experience. And I think he said, I think his message was, it's up to the people of Minnesota to decide if this is a unique kind of situation that deserves a unique kind of response. And I don't think he was quite so clear about saying that the Department of Administration should just process the claims quickly. Now, we can play back the tapes and have all that stuff, but I think that there was a lot more nuance in his comments.
Well, there's no question, Representative Winkler, he was saying we have a right to decide how we're going to do it, which no one would dispute. We have a right to decide as our state how we want to respond. But he did give us some advice, some suggestions on how we should respond. And it did not include setting up a special fund. And he talked about all the difficulties of setting up a fund in which the special master, as he was, had to start making equity decisions as between claimants. It sets claimant against claimant for the pot of dollars, even with an unlimited fund. And he was forced to sort of make those kind of equity judgments. With existing state law, with tort claims caps, we avoid a lot of those equities questions because they're already built in to the trade-off the legislature made between having compensation available to individuals and the public policy behind having liability limits for government. I have a question for the members of the House. I wonder if you could share with us within that fund how you would advise the special master panel to prioritize within that, rather than simply saying, you figure it out. Would you have any structure that you would prefer, or any guidance that you would prefer to give to a special master panel in terms of prioritizing in categories of damages, or as between types of losses, or circumstances of claimants?
Well, you have no, Mr. Chair. I think the point is, from the House point of view, is to give them the parameters of the legal concepts to follow in determining this, make the findings of fact, gather the information, and ask the people who are bringing the claims. I'd be resistant to saying that you should pay medical claims to the extent you can as a first priority. Maybe we say you try to make whole economic losses to the extent you can first, followed by non-economic losses. I mean, I suppose there are things that we could do. But I just think it's hard to make that determination absent a highly detailed set of facts and a very in-depth conversation with the people. And it doesn't necessarily involve making individual decisions, which is that kind of case-by-case, fact-by-fact, or fact circumstance by fact circumstance determination is not something we're all that good at here. Well, so I would rather leave more discretion, I guess.
Mr. Chairman?
Although, Mr. Chair, I mean, some of the facts are already there for us. There were 13 people who died on the bridge. Now, I guess the question ultimately is, Do the survivors of those get the same amount of money or a different amount? But you can't change the fact that there's 13. We know of 12 who have catastrophic personal injuries, 28 of severe personal injuries. So at some point, the special master can't change that. And we have a dollar amount, and that's going to have to be allocated somehow within those numbers. And then you're going to have the other 132 people who have some other injury claims, 48 property damage claims. I mean, that's what it is. But, those numbers are going to define what the special master is going to do.
I think maybe what we want to do at this point, because we are kind of rehashing discussions we had before, and it's frankly, it's we've got every member of the Senate here, and there are two members of the House missing right now. They've been in and out. So we're kind of having this discussion with only half of the other team here, or less than half.
We're a really good team. We trust each other.
Or less than half of the other team, all of whom are going to have to be involved in deciding how you approach this. And I'll express a certain level of frustration. I know people have competing obligations. Part of the reason I think we're not keep rehashing some of the same arguments is because some members of the House team aren't here to hear the arguments the first or even the second time to try to factor it in deciding how to approach the situation. So I don't want to belabor the point, but I also don't want us to be wasting our breath here when we don't have full complements on both. To engage in this discussion. The Senate has put an offer on the table. We think it's an eminently reasonable one. The House may have a different opinion on that. But at this point, I think maybe the ball is in the House's court to respond. That's one reason that we tried to get the offer to the House Wednesday afternoon. We're hoping there might be a more detailed exchange in preparation for today. Perhaps we'll have something on Monday afternoon that we can deal with in that regard. Unless there's anything that we think is specifically going to further the conversation at this point, I would propose that we set the next meeting time.
Yep.
And really emphasize that we hope every member of the House Conference Committee can be here for the full meeting, because it's really frustrating, if you will, arguing a case before half the jury, when the whole jury is going to be making the decision. I understand this legislature, people come and go, there are competing meetings and stuff like that, but I don't think it's most productive for only half the people to be, or less than half the people to be here for most of the conference committee meeting.
Mr. Chair, just the gavel, of course, will transfer to the House for the next meeting. Just a couple of scheduling items. I believe Monday and Thursday we have floor sessions. I don't know how extensive they're going to be, but they are scheduled for Monday and Thursday. On Tuesday and Wednesday, both Representative Kahn and I are on the Pensions Commission, and they're trying to wrap up the pensions bill, and so we may have some limited availability, but just keep that in mind as you're trying to schedule things. So.
And Senator Betzold, as of now, the House is scheduled to be in session from 12:30 to 3 on Monday, and with the possibility of reconvening at 6 in the evening if necessary. So my intention is to call the meeting from 3 to 6, assuming that things don't go awry in the House floor, hard as that is to imagine.
2:30 a.m.
Pardon?
2:30 a.m. Is that going awry?
I didn't fall asleep today. So as of now, it's from 3 to 6. I hope that should work, so far as I know, for most schedules. And then we will see where we go from there.
I would just propose that we 3 o'clock or, half an hour after the last body adjourns.
I like to say 10 minutes, because then it really is half an hour.
Well, okay. Ten minutes is fine. We're on the floor as well. I think we're going at 1.
1 o'clock.
And I don't know what's on the agenda, but I don't think it's expected to be just general orders, I guess. Depends which bill.
You're only going to do 75 bills on Monday.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winter, where would we be meeting on Monday then?
We are scheduled for the basement hearing room.
In
the state SOB. Building.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right. There being no further business to come before the conference committee today, we are adjourned.
Okay, thank you.
I will.